Hello, and welcome to the 25th Hour Ideas Podcast with your host, Michael Gallagher. Our goal is to investigate the knowledge, skills, and habits required to build a first-class organization. And to do this, we examine topics through the lens of sports, economics, and finance. Now, Kanan Severin is not only one of the greatest wide receivers in UVA history, but he also just released a film that is his writing and directorial debut. The film is titled Lean In, and it could be found on YouTube. The link is also in the show notes. I've already seen it twice and highly, highly recommend it. Now, as for this episode, Kanan shares stories from his time at UVA and in the NFL. Having seen some of them play out in person, I'm even more appreciative of the obstacles that Kanan has overcome. This is truly a masterclass on persistence and designing systems built for success. So without further ado, let's get to it. Kanan, it's been way too long. I've been looking forward to this for a long time.
Mike, I appreciate you having me on, man. It's been a pleasure reconnecting and glad we can make this happen.
I did bring this up earlier, but I'll say again that it's big steps for the podcast, talking to someone now with their own Wikipedia page.
I'm telling you, man, they're giving Wikipedia pages to anyone these days. Trust me.
I was going through my phone.
Yeah.
And I was talking to Henry, and it came up there was
Henry Coley.
Exactly. There was a picture after one of our games versus Louisville. That it was an iconic picture I had of him in the locker room where I was, even though I wasn't in the picture, it brought back a vivid memory. And along the same lines, I have a picture of your one-handed catch against Miami in 2014 on my phone. Yeah. And I did a little digging, and I didn't know that there was a story that you had where, from a previous game against Miami,
yeah,
that moment was full circle for you. So this picture now takes on an even deeper meaning for me. I wonder if you could just explain a little bit of that.
Yeah, you know, that that one-handed catch, that was like the final result of a story coming full circle for sure. So my first year, man, it's really a whole story with the University of Miami, to be honest. But my first year, we played Miami at Scott Stadium. We beat them in a game down to the wire. Jake McGee caught the game-winning touchdown with like 30 seconds left or something like that. We went for two. And in the back of the end zone, Michael Rocco threw me the ball, and it ricocheted off my hands, man. And that was during my first year, and the opportunities weren't coming my way. I only had one catch for 3 yards that year, so any pass that was still my way, I had to take advantage of it, and that was a missed opportunity. You know, so the fans stormed the field. I was so upset, you know, kind of felt that I really kind of let myself down. I always took pride in catching the ball and found it kind of embarrassing every time I dropped the ball, you know. So that was a tough moment. And I remember going out to eat with my dad that night, you know, after the game. And I was just so upset. Didn't even say a word, basically. And yeah, that was that. And then the next year, we went down to Miami in 2013, and I didn't travel. You know, I wasn't on the travel list to go down there. You know, so that's another kind of message of, man, I remember watching on the TV, sitting back with some other guys that didn't travel, and I was just kind of thinking to myself, like, man, no, I can't be like this, man. Like, I believe I have too much talent and can bring too much to the team and help the team win to be not even traveling. So it wasn't until my third year I really kind of made that switch mentally, physically. Just my whole demeanor changed. My whole character changed in the way I approached the game. And, you know, that third year, that third time actually facing Miami, that's when I actually came back and we were down. I want to say we were down at the time, maybe 7-3. And that gave us the lead with that one-handed catch, one-handed touchdown. So for me, it was an instance of really bouncing back. You know, the two other times I faced Miami, the the outcome wasn't what I was looking for. So to know that, you know, I made a catch that would, you know, be remembered, and you've been able to keep on your phone, definitely means a lot and meant a lot to me that I was able to bounce back throughout that whole process.
It was one of the few moments, and I think Coach Mendenhall expressed the same sentiment, that most of his football related memories are relationships and off the field things, as opposed to plays during a game and scores or statistics and things like that, mm-hmm. which seems to go against the grain, because I'm assuming every NFL coach or most college coaches can recite plays and drives and games and things like that. I don't remember. I remember almost nothing from games, but this was one of those moments where I could picture myself where I was on the field watching the catch happen and then see a picture like that, and it takes me right back, as opposed to the other 99% of times during games.
Right. No, yeah, it was a big time play, big play from Grayson. I want to say it was, maybe double left Aggie. I mean, that was a play call, and the safety, he didn't think I was going to catch the ball. He went for the interception. He really could have taken my head off, but I snagged it right before he snagged it, so it all worked out.
And you mentioned how this began playing Miami your first year. I want to take a step before that. You got to Virginia, I was doing my research. I was watching earlier today. You snowed in here. I've got, this probably dates the episode by saying it was snowed in, but I was watching your junior year of high school highlight video.
We went way back, huh?
I went way back. I was being very thorough for this. Were you really 6'3", 210 pounds as a junior in high school?
Man, that year, I probably even gained weight. I can eat a lot of food, and I gain weight quickly. I think I probably even got up to 220 pounds, 221 pounds. I was like 6'3", 220 in high school playing receiver, but that's why everyone thought I was going to be an outside linebacker or a safety. No one wanted me to be a receiver because everyone thought I was too slow. And looking back now, probably because I wasn't eating right, and I was, like I said, I was getting weight, and not good weight at that time. I was just eating the wrong food and didn't have the right nutrition. So, but height and weight, I was that size. I remember even coming on to University of Virginia on my first physical. I was 6'3", 212 as an incoming freshman, as a wide receiver. So,
would you believe it if I said, there's no official measurement, thank goodness, but my guesstimation at that same point in time, mm-hmm. to compare my junior year of high school, I believe I was 5'8", 130 pounds.
Man, 130.
I believe I was roughly 130.
Man, you got to come to my house, man. My dad's from St. Lucia, man. We can get you some oxtails, get you some lamb, get you put some meat on those bones, man.
Well, in high school, in gym class, there was a weightlifting unit where we learned the basics of weightlifting. I don't think I could bench any more than the bar at that point.
Man. Well, shoot, what's the bar? The bar is 45.
45
pounds.
Yeah, not 45. Kilos, pounds.
Hey, man. It's all good, bro. It's all good. We got to start somewhere. It's all good.
Exactly. And I want to tie all these things together, how all these things I've seen that you've mentioned about training and dieting and all these things. And it seemed to wrap itself up beautifully in a statement. Well, I'll just lay it out here and I'll let you take it from here.
Yeah.
I'm sure you're familiar with the saying, how you do one thing is how you do everything.
Absolutely. Now that's a big one. That helped me make my transformation at University of Virginia, for sure. I think people saw it on the field with production. Right, my first year I had one catch. My second year I had five catches, and my last 2 years I had 96 catches, I want to say. You know, so that, you know, it was seen on the production side of the field. But how you do everything is how you do one thing is how you do everything. Really trickled over to the way I carried myself in the classroom. I became an honor roll student, and before it was even up in the air if I was even going to be able to stay at school academically. And then now leaving the University of Virginia, you know, on the honor roll, academic all ACC, and then just the way I was carrying myself. I think that even goes back to, the way I was moving, just the way that I began to move. I began to move like someone that cared about their schoolwork, the foundation of the development of, as a wide receiver, as a football player, you know, getting around Coach Higgins, getting around Dave Watford, Grayson Lambert, Matt Johns, learning more about the game, getting on the board and all that stuff, you know. So I think I just started to grow as a person, as a man. I think that really helped me just blossom into who I am now and really who I'm going to be moving forward.
And during that time, I might remember that you were dealing with a broken hand at one point too.
Correct. Yeah, correct. After my first year season, we had spring ball, and I want to say it was like the end of March, maybe like March, like 22nd. I ended up breaking my hand in spring ball. I was out for about 8 weeks. You know, couldn't work out, couldn't even sweat. I was in a little like an air cast, and yeah, it was a man. Oof. I gained like 20 pounds during that time. I gained like 20 pounds, you know. The white spot and those Gus burgers and the Girls Worth, those will add up, man. Those aren't nothing to play with, especially when you can't run and work out. So, you know, that was something that really kind of hindered me for my next year, you know. So that, you know, breaking my hand. And then with that, I also saw other receivers, they were getting better, right? It really gave me a glimpse of the development and how, right, everyone is working on their game. Everyone is on the workout plan, you know, in the weight room. You know, everyone is, you know, doing spring ball, learning the plays more, getting practical reps. And then I'm not getting any of those reps. I'm hustling backwards. And yeah, I really saw that. I really saw that because, you know, that dropped me even lower on the depth chart for my second year, you know, as first years came in and as, you know, other guys were getting older. Such as like, you know, EJ Scott, Miles Gooch, Jake McGee, Tim Smith, Dominic Terrell, Adrian Gamble, Darius Jennings, Kyle Dawkins. These guys are all ahead of me. Everyone's ahead of me. Keon Johnson, everyone is ahead of me. You know, that's what happened after my broken hand.
If you could go back, would you have done anything different in those 8 weeks while you were recovering?
Oh, man, I probably immediately would have set up meetings with probably like five different people. One, Kelly Pugh in the athletic training room, really just to let her know how committed I am to getting back out there, getting back on the field, healing my hand, doing whatever I can. Next, I would go with Randy Bird and get a nutrition plan. What should I eat exactly? What supplements are going to help, you know, help heal my bones, help heal them faster, or, you know, speed up this healing cycle. Then I'll get with, you know, the strength coach, whether it's Ryan Tedford or, you know, whoever's there now, right? So just I would get with them on what can I do to make sure I stay in shape and keep the muscle I have. And then out on the football side of things, I would make sure that I'm writing the plays down, writing any install down, right? That year was Coach Fairchild's first year. So it's a new coach. You know, a first impression is a lasting impression. When I come back, I want to make sure that I know exactly where to line up so I can just play fast, not even have to think, is it twins right? Is it twins left? Where do I line up in trio right? You know, so just really, you know, honing in on that and then just probably just get with Coach Higgins and really just learn, just continue to be a student. That's how I would maximize those 8 weeks and not just kind of feel bad for myself. I'm injured. You know, no one really cares about me. I can kind of do whatever I want to do.
You know, no one's really keeping an eye on me. You know, so it's almost like you take it as a little vacation. And then when you get back, it was kind of really shame on me for wondering, how come no one is, you know, putting me in the game, or no one is, you know, giving me any practice reps or anything like that. So I really kind of shot myself in the foot. So that's what I would do to change it.
And you seem to turn that up to 11 when Jackson was telling, when I was talking to Jackson, he was telling me stories of how you guys lived together and would make the same food pretty much every day. It would be eggs for breakfast and then chicken, rice, and spinach.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That first, so yeah, I gained all that weight and I wanted to, I had another surgery after my second year with my knee. And I remember sitting there on the couch and I thought, man, this can't be how my story goes here. My career was halfway over. Coach Higgins would always tell this story of potential. It's like, man, you got all this potential. You got all this potential, but your career is halfway over. You got six catches. Six. You were a four-star recruit. We were excited when we got you. You got six catches. What's up with that? And he would talk about potentials like hand in the sand. You pick up some sand at the beach. Yeah, man, you got a lot of sand in the first 5 seconds. But after a while, the sand starts coming out of the sides of your hands and it starts slowly going away. Like, you know, 10 seconds later, you open your hands, there'll be no sand, no potential, no nothing. It's over. He's like, man, this is your script. Like, you write the story. Like, take control of your narrative. And that's what I had to do. He really pushed me to do that, truthfully. And I got with Randy Bird. You know, he's like, hey, look, you need a meal plan, you need a schedule. You need to make sure you're maximizing your time here, you know, because we got to make up for lost time. And I probably reached out to Randy Bird like 2-3 times to set up a meeting for a meal plan. And I think, to be honest, as the ninth receiver, it's like, is this guy really serious? Like, is he wasting my time? What's this guy's deal? And I think once I really kind of stayed on him, after like the third time, he's like, all right, come in. We made a meal plan. And that was going to be the plan, because I was about 20 pounds overweight. I was 230 pounds with 16% body fat. He showed me a graph of NFL wide receivers and their body fat. He's like, man, look, if you want to play at that level, it's like, man, you got to be at no more than like 9%. It's like, to do that, man, we got to change everything you eat. So he said, look, this is what we're going to do. Lunch and dinner, chicken breast, brown rice, spinach leaves. It's like, man, if you can do that for the summer. He's like, I'm still the ninth receiver at this time. I'm the ninth receiver. And he said, look, man, if you do that for the summer, it's like, man, maximize that and lose the weight. Man, I think you'll be able to play faster. You can be more in shape. You'll have more endurance. And Coach Higgins was so adamant on being in elite shape, being in superior shape. That's what he would always say. You know, so once I started to do that, my third year, it worked. I lost the weight. I won the starting job. I became the leading receiver. I had the most receptions on the team from a touchdown perspective. And then that's when Jackson saw that it was working. And I said, man, I think if you get on this plan as well, I think it can do benefits for anybody that gets involved in it. And he was the one that he jumped on board, and, you know, shoot, before you know it, he became a captain and he became a leader and he became, you know, all these things. So it's something that really worked for him as well. I know from a body fat and muscle perspective, I know it really helped him as well. And shoot, my third year, I brought it down, I lost like 25 pounds before the season. I was 210 pounds, 8% body fat. So just really changed it with my nutrition and everything I ate.
I think Randy, going back to what you said about whether he thought it was worth it, I think Randy drew the line when I would ask him for a meal plan.
Yeah. Hey, you know what, man? He probably found out you were just lifting the bar. He was like, look, meal plan. We got to get you with the strength coaches, man. We want you repping at least 135. You got to at least rep 135. At least got to.
Well, luckily now that's a possibility. Although after the gyms were shut down for months, it almost went back to being the bar.
Oh man, we got to get you a
We gotta get you some dumbbells, man, for the basement or something, man. We can't have you lifting the bar. We're going back to the gym, just lifting the bar, man.
No, not a good sight.
if that's the case, if anything, gotta go to the dumbbells. Go lay light dumbbells, man.
Do some push-ups.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Stay away from that bar. If we can only get the bar, go straight to the push-ups.
And I'm fascinated by this whole process of Randy pointing out this is where in 3 months this regimen will get you to where you want to go. Mm-hmm. And that was back then. What now are you doing? Because I know you're very determined and goal oriented and all these qualities. So what I'm interested in, what are you doing now in your life? Like, what kind of systems do you have set up similar to that are geared towards similar goals?
Similar goals for like nutrition or?
Well, I mean, like it could be the same thing. Like, I know at one point in time, I was trying to do a couple of things. Like I'm like, ooh, it's going to be better to be a morning person. So I should be waking up at 4:30 a.m. every day or something like that. And I tried to come up with a habit of this was back in the beginning of, no, it might've been pre-quarantine actually. Mm-hmm. I was trying to motivate myself to get up early because obviously if you're trying to have a new habit system, you need it. It goes the cue, the craving, the response, and the reward. So I'm like, I have to channel all these things. So I have to enjoy waking up early. So I would wake up early, and the first thing I would do for the first hour is film TikTok videos. And then I did that for a full month, I think, this summer, and got a couple thousand likes out of it. But it eventually wore out. It's the same process of knowing what I want to achieve. At that point, I wanted to be a morning person. So right. I had to create a system that would bring about that result. And you wanted to play faster and have that superior shape and all those things. So the diet and the exercise was how to get to there. So what are you working towards now? Like, what goals and systems are you implementing now?
Yeah. If anything, what that whole regimen that I was doing made me realize is just the power of routine and power of habit, right? I think I'm a big believer. If you show me someone that's quote unquote successful, like I'll show you someone that'll be someone with a great routine. So right now I think one of the biggest things that I do every day is every single morning I get up and stretch. And I have a designated time that I get up, right? So, you know, it could be 7:15, could be 6:45, 7:30 range. You know, just that I get up and do the same thing every day. So getting up, stretching, then meditating. Meditating has really been something that I've taken to the next level of during quarantine. I always thought I never had time for it. I always thought I was bad at it. But now I understand, you know, if you were to Google what do successful people do, what's the top 10 things they do, I guarantee meditation would be on that list. I think there's power in being still. There's power in slowing down, and there's power in really kind of just being with our thoughts. Right, this world is getting faster and faster every day. So I think if anything, really just kind of honing in on taking time for yourself and being kind to yourself, and just slowing down when you can. And then after that, it's definitely affirmations. That's definitely been key for me. Just for self growth, for self belief, just to, you know, things that I want to, you know, aspire to have in my life. You know, that, I think affirmations are definitely really, really huge. If I could have said those things in college, I think if I understood that in college, you know, that would definitely be helpful. I've been reading a ton of books on it, whether it's The Secret, whether it's The Four Agreements, and you kind of realize that words are like spells. You know, the way that you talk to yourself is so crucial. You know, even if it's, you know, something that's, you know, a part of the things I say every day are, you know, day by day in every way, things are getting better. Or little by little, a little becomes a lot. Or no one is your friend, no one is your enemy, everyone is your teacher. So just kind of taking all these little things just to grow and just like I said, just kind of take your time and take a step back and really just be with yourself and be with your thoughts. I think that can definitely enhance anyone's growth.
That reminds me of the quote. I can't remember who said it. It was something along the lines of, all of our problems stem from not being able to sit quietly with our own thoughts.
Yeah. I think that was Marcus Aurelius. Absolutely. Absolutely, man.
I can't, not only can I not sit quietly, I can't even, if I'm listening to a podcast or even watching Netflix now, it's got to be at least double speed. Even one speed isn't enough to, it's got to be ratcheted up.
Man, this world, like I said, man, this world
it's
is
faster.
Getting faster and faster. The normal speed isn't even enough.
it's not. It's really not. And whether there's some deep-seated issue there, that's a thing for another day.
Yeah, I'll say this. Like when I'm listening to a book on Audible or a podcast on Audible, sometimes I'll put on even like 1.4 if I'm following along, reading along in my book, just to get the information and then get on to the next book, you know, jot down what I needed to jot down, underline what I need to take away from the book. But then, okay, on to the next one. Let's ride. Let's do it.
So you're not up to like 3 times speed.
No. I'm not up to three times like what you got going on, but hey man, different strokes for different folks, man. It's all good, man. It's all good.
This leads perfectly. You mentioned one of these affirmations about everyone being a teacher. And yeah. I'm very interested in knowing, because I'm sure there's some overlap of who were the people mm-hmm. that you learned the most from at Virginia? Like, who did you find were your mentors? And yeah. like how you were mentioning, I hadn't heard the story you were saying came from Coach Agins about potential in the sand. I love that. If yeah. there's any similar things you've taken away that would be perfect to share.
Yeah. No, I got, man. Coach Agins and I, that's how our bond really started, man. Was just I would go over there in his office and we would just talk life, really, man. He told me a lot. It was so many little quotes like that, and then it was only a matter of time until I started to, you know, kind of repeat them to him. And he would just kind of be like, man, you're learning, you're growing, right? So he would always be like, hey, look, man, and this is one of my favorite ones, to be honest. He's like, look, McHugh Center is like a beach. It's like plenty of people come through here, plenty of people leave their footprints. But just like the waves in the sand, it's like, you know, it will wash the footprints all away. But there's only a select few, like no matter what, their footprints last forever. It's like, man, are you going to be one of those footprints? Like, are you going to leave your mark? Like, what are you going to do today to leave your mark? So even like little things like that, that always pushed me, man. I've always been a big quote guy. I've always been someone that really, anytime I could tie in a quote to my journey, to my story, to be motivated through someone else's story, through it, that was always huge for me, you know? So I think that was huge, man. And even just the way that Coach Agins would even talk about, you know, the privilege it is to be playing wide receiver at University of Virginia, right? He had rules that we had to follow that I think my fourth year that I really wanted to like to live by and to you know, make sure that when people think of me, when people see number 9, you know, this is what they think of. You know, shoot, the rules. He had 5 rules. They were must be tough. Must be accountable as a competitor. Must be a contributor on special teams. Must be reliable in the run game. Must be dependable in the pass game. You know, so just even the way that just the word that he was instilling in us, and that I believed it so much that okay, if I can even do those things, then I can help you know myself grow as a player. I can help the team win. I can give us a better chance to win. So. No, he just, there's a whole bunch of, and as well as Coach Fairchild on the offensive side, and someone I really learned from, and then older guys as well, just like, you know, from Darius Jennings, Miles Gooch, you know, guys that really set the tone. And really, you know, their last year, their fourth year and my third year, you know, there was competition. I think at that time, it was kind of clear. I think Coach London and Coach Fairchild, they opened it up of, okay, we got to really make a jump here in 2014. Like, we had the guys, we had the talent, like, on the offensive side, like, we gotta make something happen. So, just anything I can learn from them on the, just from taking advantage of the moment, man, I had to do it. So,
are there any favorite things that you took away from Coach London during that time?
Yeah, man, Coach London was a special dude, man. Coach London is he was the first person to believe that I could play wide receiver at the college level, especially in the Power Five conference. Like I said, I don't think I mentioned this yet, but my first few offers were for, my first offer was for defense at Boston College to play defensive end. My second, you know, Coach Narduzzi, the head coach at Pittsburgh now, but I think he's still there. You know, he offered me as a safety at Michigan State when he was there. You know, Missouri wanted me to play tight end. You know, Penn State wanted me to play H-back. You know, so no one really thought that I could do it, could play at a high level at wide receiver. So the fact that, and I think a lot of people at UVA maybe had similar stories like that. Like, you know, of course, London took a chance on you. You know, so I think it's even in that regard of, if you believe in yourself, you take a chance on yourself, like, man, prove yourself right, man, and go for it. And that's what I think that's what he showed a lot of us, of just believing in a lot of us. And, you know, that's what I took from Coach London, man. Just and especially just the way, and as well just the way that you carry yourself and you handle yourself. It'd be very hard to say anything bad about this man's character. So, you know, this is a man who's done well for himself, and you take a lot of appreciation for someone that believes in you, you know, someone that takes a chance on you. So that's big for me.
The schools you had gotten offers from, I'd seen that same list, but what wasn't on there was that it was for those different positions. So that's fascinating.
Yeah, man. Yeah. The coach Jim Reed, Coach Sean Moore, and Coach London, they took a chance on me at wide receiver. They were the first ones. And then with those other offers, they kind of realized that, okay, dang, Kanan wants to play wide receiver. We're not even going to get a chance if we don't offer him a wide receiver. So that's when everyone kind of flipped over to wide receiver. Some people said, okay, we're not offering you at all. And, but yeah, they took a chance on me, man.
Another thing you said before that caught my eye, seeing as we were both growing up, and I'm still going to put myself in this bucket of being a big Patriots fan. I don't know where your allegiances stand now, mm-hmm. but when you told the story of getting to the Giants,
yeah,
and seeing David Tyree,
yeah,
and thinking like, hey, what this guy did to me a few years ago. It's a very valuable skill, I've come to realize, being able to compartmentalize that fandom or certain feelings. I certainly had to do it when I started as a student manager, where I was almost starstruck by, hey, like, I've gone from never playing a down of football in my life to I'm right here on the precipice. I'm right there in the proximity of D1 college football. Like, I'm right here on the edge. It was a huge step for me.
You're in the room. You're in the room, man.
I'm in the room. I wanted nothing more than to be in the room, and I got there. How important is it to be able to compartmentalize these things? Like, obviously, you could have just, you know, kept giving David Tyree a hard time. Like, so I'm assuming some people might have, but I mean, you didn't, and you approached it like a true professional, and it's not to be...
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm assuming not everyone would have acted in the same way that you did.
Maybe not. So when I saw David Tyree, so I'm being from right outside of Boston, I saw David Tyree right when I signed my contract. He introduced himself to me, and, you know, tell me congratulations. You know, at the time he was the assistant wide receivers coach as well as director of player relation. And yeah, man, I was like, man, David Tyree, like, man, you know, kind of just like to lighten the mood as well, you know, just kind of say, man, you know, you really had me crying in the eighth grade, man, when you made that catch. You know, now, he's like, hey, look, man, I was just doing my job. I was doing what I had to do. And then now it's like, hey, look, it's all good, man. We're here now. I'm in the room now. So like, it doesn't even really matter, you know? And I think for me, I put the fan stuff aside probably when I was like a junior in high school.
6'3", 210.
At 6'3", 210, I remember a guy on rivals.com compared me to Braylon Edwards. And I thought that was like the coolest thing ever. And I was like, dang, shoot, man, I got to get to that level. You know, I got to get there. And shoot, by the way, you want to see some serious college highlights, watch Braylon Edwards at Michigan. That guy was unreal. But yeah, I just wanted to get at that level. And I put that aside, you know, kind of way back then. Right. So even when I got to Virginia, you know, I wasn't even watching NFL games or anything like that. In high school, I barely even watched the NFL games. Even now, I barely watch them, you know, so I never looked at, you know, anyone in a certain kind of, you know, on a pedestal or anything like that. I think when you get into the room and you're, you know, on the board, the same thing you were doing with Grayson Lambert, David Watford, and Matt Johns, getting on the board, now you're doing with Eli Manning. It wasn't so much of, man, this is, man, I'm starstruck. It's really just, it's satisfying to me to know that, man, there is no secret formula. You know, there is no secret formula. He's doing the same thing that we were doing in college to make sure when he's facing the Jacksonville Jaguars and it's third down and they have a blitz coming, he knows what's coming. He knows that, you know, the receiver knows where to go, where to line up, and where to, you know, so they can play fast and make a play down the field, right? So, like, just the fact that there was no secret formula, I think that was pretty cool. I think, I think it gets to a point you kind of got to put that aside, and it's business, especially when you start getting signed by a team and then you get released by a team. And it's like, man, I thought they loved me. It's like, man, there's no love in this thing. This, like, I think it was Alvin Pierman, UVA legend. And he said, the first time you get released, like, man, that hurts. That hurts bad. Because it's your first time, really, someone saying, hey, look, we met as a staff, we met as a front office, and we really don't need you, right? We don't need you. Where your stuff is in a trash bag downstairs, and good luck elsewhere. It's like, man, that hurts. Your whole time from high school to college to getting drafted or getting signed, you've been the man, and then now someone's saying, we don't need you. I think that's pretty tough. Then the second time, he said the second time isn't as bad as the first time. And then the third time is, you know, it's water off your back. Like, all right, next team, next spot, let's go, let's do it. You know, that's even if you're fortunate to get another contract, you know. So it just becomes business, and you kind of lose that sense of, you know, this team is like a UVA to me. There's only a few guys that, right, you know, maybe Heath Miller for the Steelers, Troy Polamalu for the Steelers. Like, that's like a UVA. That they're in that Steelers family for life. Like, they could show up there any day of the week and they'd be excited to see them. You know, but for, you know, I remember Coach Hagans always used to say, there's only a few guys that are going to retire, and the GM and the owner and the head coach are going to say a speech on how thankful they are that you came and we signed you and it was a great experience. And, like, man, that's hard. That's like, 0.1% to get to the NFL, that's about like 0.1% that happens to, you know. So yeah, man, just I don't know if that answers your question, but just yeah, just when you get in those rooms, and like, that's another thing too, and just acting like you belong. Like, act like you belong, because I think initially you get into the NFL, you get to that space, right? You get with David Tyree, and it's like, man, you're here, you made it to the big leagues, you made it to the show. And it's very easy to say, like, I think it's maybe even natural to be in your own head when you're walking by, like in the Steelers, you know, with James Harrison and Marquise Pouncey and AB and Le'Veon Bell. And you're like, dang, do I belong? Like, I think you'll be in your own head asking that. And then maybe you make a play and you're like, absolutely, I belong. Like, they chose me. Like, I'm here for, they could have picked anybody and they chose me. So I think even just having that confidence that you're there for a reason and that you belong, and now walk like you belong and act like you belong. And hopefully that can, you know, prolong that your career and the situation and keep you in the room.
Something I've gotten from you, not only over the course of this conversation, but from our time at Virginia is, and something I've realized myself, is just how important it is to establish a great group of people in an organization. And there are so many, I don't know, I'll let you go anywhere with this, but whether it's a great group of people, like having everyone's goals aligned, or having everyone work well as a team, or not letting certain people, I think Jackson brought this up, the 10-80-10 principle, where you have 10 guys like really bought in, 10 on the complete other end, and then everyone else in the middle, and they have to go, they're pretty much picking a side.
Absolutely.
I'll leave this open-ended, but I just want to hear your thoughts on the culture and people.
Absolutely, man. You know, man, my dad used to always preach this, man, birds of a feather flock together. Like, who you hang around with is literally so important. Like, who your circle is, like, who is your circle? Who is your nucleus of people that you're hanging with? My first 2 years, when I wasn't playing, I would be with the guys that didn't play. And I would be with them saying, yeah, you know, this person's not good, and this is why we're losing, and they got to play us. Why aren't we playing? Why aren't they playing us? Like, that was the environment I was putting myself in. Once I changed my environment, and those guys all transferred. Those guys, they all left the program. And once I left that environment and, like, you know, like I said before, I took control of my narrative, took control of, you know, the way that I wanted to see this story of myself ending at Virginia. Like, naturally, like, my story started to align with guys like Jackson, with guys like Darius Jennings, Miles Gooch, you know, with guys like Ross Burbank, David Dean, guys like Jordan Ellis, guys like Ben Hogg. Like, my journey started aligning with theirs because they were on that journey. They wanted to, you know, to make plays and help us win. All right. So that's who I started hanging out with. That's who I started, you know, kind of aligning with. You know, I think there's something to be said, you know, if your words and your thoughts and your actions are in alignment and someone else is on that same page, then yeah, we're going to connect even more. Like, we have such a strong belief in this thing. Like, we'll connect even more. So I think, you know, life is so big on relationships and networking beyond football. I think especially just, you know, who you want to spend time with and who you want to become, right? It's like, if someone is doing something and you have a certain admiration for that, you know, it would be wise to get around this person. It'd be wise to get around, you know, a guy like Perry Jones, you know, to take you under your wing, right? This is, when I first got there, this was Superman. This was the hardest working guy on the team. You know, that'd be wise to do, you know? So I think that's so important, man. I think it really goes back to birds of a feather flock together. And I think it's unconsciously you'll become like these people, like unconsciously you won't even know what's happening. And the scary thing is it goes both ways. Right, if you hang around a positive person, unconsciously you'll become positive over a span of not in 2 days, not just in, you know, passing conversation. But if you say, "Nah, look, I'm gonna make sure that I spend, you know, the next month doing what this person does. I want to be more positive." You'll be more positive. Same way negatively, like unconsciously, it would just start happening.
As you were saying these things, I remembered a story. It was 2014, I guess. And the people, as you were saying, the birds of a feather, you were at the Observatory Hill Dining Hall. It was 2014 with Ryan Santoro, Matt Johns, Jackson Mateo, like that group of guys. And
yep. Santini.
Exactly. And I stumbled upon you guys. I was probably, I don't know, by myself under what circumstance, I have no idea. And you guys were gracious enough to let me join you. And we were all sitting there eating breakfast. And a few minutes in, I can't remember who it was, but someone said, everyone's putting your phones away for the rest of the meal. So
that's from Jackson.
I bet it was. I bet it was. And so we all put our phones away and really enjoyed the rest of that meal. And it was to the point where that season I didn't keep a daily journal like I did in 2016. But that was one of those things that, like I said earlier, those moments off the field that really stuck with me more than the in-game stuff. That was something that left a lasting impression on me.
Yeah, no, that's a good trick to have. I want to say it's Jackson because I feel there's a number of times I've even heard him say, look, man, we're all on our phones. Like, let's lock in and just like spend, like, yo, let's be in the moment. Like, let's be present. Like, let's be where our feet are. And let's have some dialogue, man, and talk to one another. You know, I think that's, I'm glad we could all share that moment, you know, especially in getting a good meal at Old Hill. You know, so I think there's something to be said in like that discipleship and really kind of like literally breaking bread with one another. I think there's power in that. So I'm glad we got to share that moment, man.
That was one of, I had many more of those moments for multiple reasons. One, like I was saying earlier, to bulk up, I would stay at JPJ Dining the full 3 hours it was open, the 4 or 5 nights of the week. So I'd be there forcing myself
just hammering chicken breasts.
Exactly. I was about to say forcing myself to eat chicken breasts again and again every night. I believe I put on 30 or so pounds between starting that first year as a manager and then the beginning of the second year. I'm pretty sure I added about 30 pounds.
Bro, if I remember correctly, you were walking around kind of swole, man, by the end of it. Like,
I got up to 180. So yeah, from that 130.
I remember, man. You were looking big.
For me, 180 was relatively huge for me.
I like that, man. That's what's up. But I like that.
Yeah, but the protein stuff, that wasn't even the reason I would be at JPJ for that long. That was a side benefit. The real benefit was being able to have like that one meal at O'Hill. Almost three separate meals every night with a different group of guys that would come in. And it didn't even have to be from just the football team. Like, it was all the other athletes eating there too. But to see you guys roll in and then I'd blend right in because I'd be eating like a new plate of food every hour. And so nobody would know I was there the entire time. But to listen in on these conversations and hear you guys either talking about an upcoming game or the previous game or some non-football stuff at all, that was the highlight of my time at JPJ. And like, that was the number one reason. It was the next best thing to being with you guys in the locker room and kind of that camaraderie.
Yeah, man, that camaraderie is special. I think that even goes back to, right, I think even the team is like a team is like a family in regards to like you become close because you do hard things together, right? Even though you weren't a football player, like as a manager, like from equipment manager, athletic trainer to people in recruiting, they're still a part of the team. They're still, you know, up early before even the players get there, before the coaches get there sometimes, you know? So I think it's just a sense of like going through hard things together. And I think that's why even family, right? Our immediate family, it's so close. Like, you've literally been together through day one, all the ups, all the downs, you know, all that stuff. So yeah, and then that's what makes the camaraderie so special. Like, we're all going through it. we're all battling, man.
Was there, because I haven't been in one of these rooms at the professional level, was there a difference in the culture between Virginia and an NFL team?
Yeah, I think there's a big difference. No matter what, I could always go back to Virginia, UVA. I could always walk into McHugh Center. Maybe not right now with this whole pandemic situation. They might be like, look, bro,
get out.
Now's not the time to just be popping in and just checking in on everybody. All right, go away, get out of here. Like, you know, so, but other than that, right, I think what I realized in the NFL, Saturdays is such a big day. Everyone wears their college gear, right? If someone's on the Steelers right now, but they played for the Jaguars for 4 years, they're not going to be wearing the Jaguars gear like, go Jaguars. Like, it's going to, you know, you're going to say, go Ohio State, go Mississippi State, go Boston College, go Iowa, like, go UVA. Like, that's, you'll be repping your school, because, like, that's something you can rep forever, right? Like, I played for, by the time I was on the Giants, and I was on the Steelers at first, I'm not saying go Steelers anymore. Like, that's over. That's done. That's done with. You know, it's like, that's the, like, they dumped me. It's time to move on. And now I'm with them. Now I'm with this new person. You know, so I think that's why it's a whole different dynamic with NFL. And, you know, NFL it's an opportunity. I remember Coach Tomlin would always preach, like, look, man, like, this isn't even a career. It's a career it's not even a career for someone that maybe, right, let's say Tom Brady, who's like, you know, Tom Brady, James Harrison, you know, London Fletcher. If you can play, you know, until you're 38, 41, 44 years old, okay, maybe that's a career. You did something for 20 years now. That's legit. But the average is 3 years. That's an opportunity. Like, you're going to blink and it'll be over. You know, so really just even, you know, just understanding that this is an opportunity. Like, it can go quick, it can go short. So just understanding that. And yeah, I think that real longevity is in the schools, at the University of Virginia. Coach Tomlin, he didn't even say, man, to get closer with your schools, get closer with the AD, to reach out to the head coach. If there's a new head coach, you know, pop your head, you know, if things are, you know, if we're not in a pandemic, you know, go back and pop your head in and, you know, introduce yourself. I think that's definitely very big, just to have that long lasting relationship. That's what life's about. Life is about relationships, man. It's about the people, always.
And it can't hurt that I can assure you that your footsteps are still there on the McHugh Beach.
I appreciate that, man. That means a lot, for real. That means a lot. We put, you know, as a student athlete there, especially at UVA, you know, we put so much time in this thing, man. So for you to even say that, I appreciate that. I really do.
As you're saying all these things, it's bringing to mind, I'm just even more grateful that you were one of those people back then, like whether I was thinking this way or not, that spending time around guys like you, people who were doing every little thing to get 1% better every day, that's the mentality that I stole from you guys from in the athletic world. And not with my role with the team, sure, I applied it there too, but I also applied these things to schoolwork and other areas of life too. So it was very beneficial learning from you guys.
Likewise. I appreciate that, man. And likewise. Shoot, no one knows how hard, you know, everyone is working behind the scenes. So, you know, everyone involved, man, I have, you know, from a manager perspective, I always, managers, coaches, whatever it is, I always have a lot of respect and appreciation for everyone involved. Like, even every win, every loss, like, we're in it together. You know, you could feel the losses, you could feel the wins, you know. So I think that also just goes back to the time we're putting into it. So but I appreciate you saying that, man. That means a lot.
There's one last thing, of course, I have to ask you here is, and I don't even know how it would exactly apply. Once again, I'll leave this open-ended. If you had a 25th hour in your day, what do you think would be the best use of that time?
Man, extra hour. I think with that extra hour to maximize it, I'm such a believer, man, this life is about people and about relationships. I think if even just taking an hour, like just taking a designated hour just to build your network or to build, right? If you wanted to be, right, if I wanted to be a film director, I said, man, let me reach out to the to 40 independent film directors. Like, let me reach out to as many in this hour for the next month. This hour is strictly for reaching out to these people. If I want to be a coach, if I want to be a professor, if I wanted to, to learn more about business school, like reach out to people, at Darden or something. Say, like, man, I would take that time to build and network and ask questions and any advice, any tips that you would give, your younger self, and really just kind of build off that just to get more, maybe even practical information, practical things that I could do to help grow and maybe even, build my network on the way with people that are looking to help. I think I've done that. I've gone down that avenue of, man, just even picking people's brain is asking questions. I think this, if one's willing to ask questions and trying to find out new things and, go down new avenues, I think that's huge. So I think just the network piece is vital and crucial. Who knows? I think look at coaching, right? Like, someone was a GA, two guys were a GA, at Mississippi State, and then one guy gets the head coaching job at West Virginia, and he brings his buddy along that he coached with way back when they were GAs, right? So just even from even coaching is so much of networking and relationships and kind of taking care of your people and people that that can work hard and have the work ethic to make things happen. So I would say that 25th hour would be building my network and just trying to connect with as many people as possible that's on the same path as me. I think it goes back to alignment and birds of a feather flock together.
Kanan, I don't know if there's any other way to say it than this was simply incredible. And I want to thank you for sharing all this today. I greatly appreciate it.
Mike, man, when you called and when you reached out to have me on the podcast, it was truly an honor, man. So I appreciate you thinking of me. I appreciate you considering me to be on here. It's been a pleasure to talk ball, to talk life, to talk development, all that good stuff, man. So continue with the podcast. Keep doing your thing, bro. And I'm rooting for you, man. I'm super glad we were able to cross paths, and I'm glad that we kind of the stars aligned, for us to be on each other's journey, man. So I appreciate you, brother.
Thank you once again to Kanan. And I highly recommend checking out his new film, Lean In. The link is in the show notes. If you have not yet left a rating and a short review on Apple Podcasts, I promise it'll be worth your while. Your support goes a long way in landing more fantastic guests and helping grow this community. Now, I want to leave you with this quote from Legacy by James Carr. He writes, "By developing the individual players and giving them the tools, skills, and character that they need to contribute beyond the rugby field, they would also, in theory, develop the tools, skills, and character to contribute more effectively on it." Thank you for listening. Until next time.